All rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable William Mormon presiding. All who have business before this court draw near and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. You may be seated.
Good morning. I'm Judge Mormon. To my right is Judge Davis. To my left is Judge Sholin. We're here today in the matter of veteran Larry D. Irvin versus Eric K. Shinseki, Secretary of Veterans Affairs, docket number 083287. Would counsel for both parties note your appearance for the record, please?
David Shardell for Appellate Secretary of Veterans Affairs. To my right, Richard Merrick, Deputy Assistant General Counsel, U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
Thank you very much. Are both parties ready to proceed? And Mr. Carpenter, would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
10 minutes, please.
Sure you wouldn't like to reserve 7?
Too unusual a number.
We had that happen yesterday. Please proceed.
May it please the court. Kenneth Carpenter appearing on behalf of Mr. Irvin. The issue in this case is whether the regulatory change which occurred during the pendency of this appeal should be considered and applied by this court in Mr. Irwin's case. There are two aspects to this question. The first is the continuing viability of this court's rule as established in Karnas as it relates to the treatment of regulations as opposed to statutes. And second, involves the decision of the VA in which they articulated in their public notice that they intended for this regulation to be retroactive. What is the effect, if any, upon this court's decision of the regulatory change before this court? We believe that under either of these propositions that this court should consider and apply the VA's amendment to 38 CFR 3.304F to Mr. Irwin's appeal. The continuing viability of the rule established by this court in Karnas is especially necessary in this case because of the circumstances in which this particular case arises, in which Mr. Irwin has a multiple diagnosis of both depression and post-traumatic stress disorder. This court, in its single judge decision, disposed of the question of depression. And the question of PTSD was not argued because it was controlled by the prior version of this regulation. Clearly, the new regulation is beneficial to Mr. Irvin, and upon remand, it would entitle him to an examination which could be dispositive of his claim under the amended regulation. In Galeos, this court did not address the question of the continuing viability of Karnas because both parties agreed that the provisions of this same regulation would be properly applied in Mr. Galeos' claim.
Mr. Carpenter, didn't Kuzma overrule Karnas?
No, well, it did as it related to that portion of Karnas that related to the retroactive application of a statute. All that was at issue in the Diamond and Bernclough cases, as well as the I just went blank on the case, was the question of the retroactivity.
Kuzma.
Thank you, Your Honor. I got Karnas in my head and couldn't get Kuzma out. I apologize. Kuzma, in all three of those cases, it dealt with the retroactive application of the VCAA, which is a statutory provision, and based upon the holdings in those cases, it was found that a statute could not be retroactively applied unless specifically allowed for by Congress.
Now, if I may interject,
yes.
Didn't the Federal Circuit go on in other cases, like the cases pertaining to hypothetical DIC regulations, to employ the Princess Cruises line of determining whether the provision has retroactivity or not? So shouldn't we take away from that that we shouldn't apply Karnas and we should instead use the Princess Cruises test?
No, I don't think so, Your Honor, because in those line of cases, it dealt with a change that was unfavorable to the veteran and a change that was to be applied retroactively to the detriment of a claimant. In this case, we're talking about the flip side of Karnas.
So there's two bases for your distinction. One is statute versus regulation and favorable versus unfavorable change?
I don't believe that I have articulated that. However, in response to your question, I believe that that is the appropriate response, that the second portion is that this is a favorable issue. To me, Your Honor, the case that controls the question of retroactivity is the United States Supreme Court case in Bowen. In Bowen, the Supreme Court said that if the agency articulates plainly that they want their regulation to be applied retroactively, then it should be applied retroactively. The continuing viability of Karnas then requires this court to determine whether or not the holding in Karnas, which was...
Now, the Secretary has said in this case that he doesn't want it applied retroactively vis-a-vis this court.
Which I think takes a certain amount of temerity, Your Honor, but they don't have that authority. The Secretary regulates the agency. The Secretary does not regulate this court. The fact that they don't want it retroactive is indicative of absolutely nothing. The Secretary promulgates regulation to manage the Department of Veterans Affairs. The Secretary does not promulgate regulations to manage this court. And as this court has discussed in other cases, Robano. In the case of the chairman's memo deciding what would the effect be for this court's decision in Haas, this court made it clear that this court controls how it will or will not apply the law. And that's what's at issue here, and that's what was at issue in Bowen, is what happens when the court is faced with a change that occurs at court. While the matter is at court. That's what has occurred in this case. We have a situation in which the VA creates a favorable change in law that would clearly be beneficial to Mr. Irwin. The consequence to Mr. Irwin, if this matter is not applied retroactively by this court, is that under the regulation as promulgated, he would then file a new claim after July 13 of 2010 that would permit him to get the benefit of that regulation and cost him the effective date. It seems to me that that works a harm that was attempted.
Isn't there some indication in the Secretary's rulemaking that possibility would not exist, that this was a mere change to a procedure and therefore he wouldn't have the opportunity to file a new claim? Unless there's new and material evidence?
Well, the very first point on the listing of the effective date applications retroactive is received by the VA on or after July 13, 2010. So it seems to me that that is an argument that may arise, and they certainly have staked out that position, but I do not believe that that position is consistent with the law, and it certainly wouldn't prevent him. What I'm suggesting is, and Judge Cholin is correct, he could also submit new and material evidence, which would be examination by a treating VA psychiatrist or psychologist that offered that opinion. And that opinion would be new and it would be material because it has a different effect based upon the change in the regulation that makes that type of opinion dispositive of the question of incurrence during service.
I'd like to stick with, let us assume that the court is going to remand your client's case back to the board. In the board decision that we are reviewing, they made credibility determinations regarding your client's statements that they found him to not be credible. How would remanding this case, for them to apply this lower evidentiary burden, change for your client? Could it be harmless error? Because if they found him to not be credible, what does lowering the that he doesn't need corroboration help?
Because the VA, by this regulation, has delegated the responsibility to VA psychiatrists and VA psychologists to make the determination on incurrence. That, in my view, either takes the credibility portion out of the secretary's position primarily and places it in his delegee, the VA psychiatrist or psychologist, or it simply says that credibility is not going to be considered as it was previously considered. It's going to be determined based upon the opinion obtained by the VA psychiatrist or psychologist. But this is one of those issues, Your Honor, that is pivotal about why he should have the opportunity to do that. If that were the case and it went back to the board, then he would have the opportunity to appeal that decision to this court to determine whether or not the regulation was or was not properly applied. And therefore, he is in a position of ensuring that he gets the benefit of this favorable change in law. If this court adopts the position of the VA, that the VA is entitled to control this court's docket and determine what this court will do with a regulatory change, then Mr. Urban and any other veteran who is similarly situated is going to lose the benefit of the application. The application is not a guarantee of a result, but it is a guarantee of the application. And the resulting application is then subject to judicial review by this court, neither of which have happened in this case. He should receive the benefit of an examination under this amendment, and if adverse, he should be entitled to judicial review of that determination. And it would seem to me, Your Honor, that the board in this case would have to send the case back to the VA unless there was a waiver for the board to do that development. That clearly an examination is what's required by this regulatory amendment, and that on remand, it would be the agency of original jurisdiction making that determination based upon the application of this new regulation.
I'd like to get back to something we were talking about earlier, which was the interaction of Kuzma and Karnas. And you said you think the seminal case here is really Bowen, which
yes.
You characterized as, did the agency intend retroactivity?
Yes.
So in that case, Kuzma and Karnas don't come into play at all.
No, they don't.
So the viability of Karnas is not in question if Bowen is the seminal case. Because it wouldn't have anything to do with whether it was a favorable change or not, whether it was statutory or regulatory or not, whether it was, it would just be, did the agency intend to pursue retroactivity?
And this panel certainly has the option, as it did in Gallegos, to decide this under that avenue. And I believe that the analysis that you've articulated is absolutely correct, that under the Supreme Court's decision in Bowen, which ironically happened 3 years earlier than this court's decision in Karnas, and Bowen, as I recall, was not mentioned in Karnas. But it seems to me, Your Honor, that the portion of Karnas that is important is the holding that regulatory changes made in a matter that's before the judicial process has been concluded, the version most favorable to the appellant will be applied, and then the court concluded that this formulation would never result in a manifest injustice to the government because the secretary controls which law is to be applied. And that's consistent with Bowen. The secretary controls. The secretary made the choice to make this retroactive. Quite frankly, in the listed circumstances of retroactivity, as opposed to simply saying any claim pending, they listed five specific circumstances. I cannot envision a scenario other than those five circumstances at the administrative level in which this would not be applied to a pending claim. Now, mayhaps the government has something that they didn't include in their public statement that was intended to be excluded here, as they've now said that this court was intended to be excluded. But your honors need to examine what they said. What they said in number five was that it was applicable, the final rule applies to the application for service connection for PTSD that is pending before the VA on or after July 13, 2007, because the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims vacated a board decision on the application and remanded it for re-adjudication, which is precisely the remedy that I'm asking for.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the Secretary's position. He says that we have to find error, other error, in order to, I guess error generally, in order to remand such a case. What is your position on that?
That I'm not aware of that rule, Your Honor. This court remands based upon change in law all the time. That's what all the VCA cases were remanded about.
Now, does it make a difference in that the VCA cases were, the change in law was statutory and Congress said that the effective date pertained to all pending claims, and as opposed to this is a regulatory change in which...
Well, I think that's where
Congress isn't defining
the Kuzma, Diamond, Burncloud line of cases comes into play in making that analysis. And my conclusion would be that it is controlled because Congress gave a specific date prospectively only. It didn't say anything about retrospective. This action by the agency is diametrically the opposite. It says clearly there are five specific circumstances in which it will be applied retroactively. It should therefore be applied retroactively by this court. And what the VA has done in its response to my motion for reconsideration of the single judge decision is to suggest that it applies only where this court has made a remand under the prior version. Well, I'm sorry, that prior version language doesn't exist in what they said in their published comments. They also refer to it has to be on the basis of the need for development. There's no reference to development in the statements made that relate to tying it to the basis for the court's remand. It simply acknowledges that if this court vacates a board decision and sends it back for re-adjudication, then the board, when it receives it back from this court, will apply it. I think the argument about the creation or this court's need to find error is simply a red herring in order to avoid giving Mr. Irvin the benefit of the retroactive application of this statute, or excuse me, this regulation, by this court.
Mr. Carpenter, yes. The specific five references to when the new regulation would apply don't purport to address what the court should do with cases pending before it.
Does
Is
not,
that
Charles.
Correct?
Does not.
And probably should not have.
Well,
obviously.
I believe that the Secretary doesn't have that authority, and that if he did have that authority, he'd be acting ultra vires.
Okay. Is your position that the cases pending before the court should be returned for application of the new regs based on 7252 and the court's remand authority?
Authority, absolutely, Your Honor.
Is there any other basis for...
Well, I believe it's consistent with this court's rule in Karnas that when there is a favorable change in law, while a matter is pending before this court, that a remand should flow. And I do not believe that the regulatory portion of that has been overruled. It may, in fact, be modified by Bowen because of Bowen's requirement that the VA expressly make it retroactive. The rule as originally applied in Karnas didn't give any deference or any consideration at all to what Congress or the VA said. Clearly, under Bowen, I think this court has to do that, and that Karnas must be modified, at least to that extent, but overruled? To me, there's absolutely no basis to overrule it. And this court has not overruled it, so in my judgment, this panel is bound by the rule in Karnas, as well as they are bound by the rule established in Bowen. And therefore, since the VA has clearly articulated that this is retroactive, that's the end of the matter. And that these post hoc rationalizations that they've come up with as to why it shouldn't be are simply an effort to defeat the remand of this case under existing law.
Do we have to go to Karnas and Bowen, or could we find that a new argument has been presented under Magid?
Under Magid? I really hadn't thought about that, but I think that Magid, at least as I read the Federal Circuit's decision, gives this court that discretion. Yes, I believe that's probably true, that would be, if you will, an end around that this court could do to avoid dealing with the question of applying either Bowen or applying Congress.
Now playing devil's advocate with myself. in Magid, the circumstance was an argument that could have been raised below, but was not, and we were not limited by issue exhaustion. Well, this argument couldn't have been raised below. So does that make a difference to your argument?
Well, that's why I began with the observation that when I chose to brief this, and there were essentially two disabilities, the depression and the PTSD, I found a viable basis under existing law for the depression, but given the existing law, I did not believe there was a viable basis. But to me, that's the catch-22 here of why you've got to go back to Bowen and or Karnas in order to be able to properly anchor this decision in that context, because that's the context in which this occurred. See that I've run out of my time. Unless there's further questions, I'll reserve.
Thank you.
May it please the Court. The Secretary's position is that VA's recent amendment to its regulation governing the adjudication of PTSD claims applies only to cases that were pending before VA as of the July 13, 2010 effective date, and not to those cases pending in the courts as of the effective date.
Where do we find that, Counsel?
Well, the U.S. Supreme Court has held, Your Honor, that retroactivity is not favored in the law, and administrative rules will not be construed to have retroactive effect unless their language requires that result. That was stated in Landgraf by the Supreme Court and reiterated by the Federal Circuit in Kuzma.
And so you would have us draw the conclusion that that which is not overtly stated doesn't exist. Is that
the conclusion?
Because otherwise, in all the factors, as I read it, in all the factors that were laid out by the VA, retroactivity was contemplated. Am I correct?
Retroactivity was contemplated for the categories of cases listed in the final rule.
But it doesn't say that, does it?
It does indicate that cases pending before the agency as of the effective date, or cases again pending before the agency after remand by this court, would be given the benefit of the reduced evidentiary burden.
And what about Mr. Carpenter's statement that the Secretary, in his wisdom, may not have decided to address what the court could do, because he had no authority to address what the court could do?
Correct, Your Honor. It's not at all clear that the Secretary has authority to tell the court how to conduct its business. However, the intent of the agency is clear. The regulation speaks to its temporal scope. It encompasses cases pending before the department as of the effective date, and those returned to the department for re-adjudication after remand from the court. It's not silent as to retroactivity, as was the case in Karnas. And unless the administrative rule, unless the language requires that result, that it be applied retroactively, retroactive application is not favored under the law.
So you would say that the court would not give retroactive application to a regulation in any circumstance where the secretary did not specify retroactive application as to that piece of his own process or any other process through which that claim might pass, including judicial review?
The secretary may promulgate regulations, and in this case did promulgate a regulation regarding its adjudication of PTSD claims. This is in Section 3 of Title 38, dealing with the department's adjudication. The secretary would have, it's not clear the secretary had authority to go beyond that, or that it was within the scope of this rule change. Moreover, the rule change, it lessens the evidentiary burden in certain cases where PTSD was alleged to have resulted from fear of hostile military or terrorist activity, and it's not clear that the veterans' alleged stressors fall within that category of cases.
But can we make that finding in the first instance?
The board discussed the alleged stressors, and the categories, the comments accompanying the final rule address the types of stressors that would be encompassed by this rule.
Right, but that would call upon the court to make an assessment whether his stressors are the type of stressors that match up with those intended by the regulation.
That would be a factual matter, although it's not clear that these claim stressors by the appellant even fall within the scope of this regulation change, regardless of the retroactive effect about the effective date. The secretary contends that the effective date regulation would not be given retroactive effect to cover cases pending at the court. There was a final board decision on the issue denying appellant's claim for PTSD, and the rule change itself, the language does not require that retroactive effect be given to cover that category of cases.
Well, let's look at what the language does say. Is pending before VA on or after July 12, 2010, because the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims vacated a board decision on the application and remanded it for re-adjudication. I believe it is your position, based on your briefing, that you require this vacation and remanding to be based upon error. Can you tell me where in the regulation it contemplates that it must be based on error?
A change in the evidentiary standard for establishing occurrence of an in-service stressor would not itself constitute the basis on which to reopen a finally denied board decision. That's from the Federal Circuit in Rutan.
Right, but it's not final. Its finality has been abated by its appeal to this court. So I don't think we need to get into the question of whether it's a finally decided claim at this point, do we?
The BVA made a final agency decision, the board decision in the claim. It was no longer pending for the agency. It has to fall within the category of cases articulated in the rule change.
Right, but the rule change doesn't talk about requiring error for us to remand it. Once we remand this case, let's say we remand it, then the regulation would apply to it. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So my question is, what is the basis for your statement in your pleadings that the error, or that the only basis upon which we can remand is if we were to find error.
The basis is that the rule itself is a procedural rule change that lowers an evidentiary burden. It's not a substantive rule change as to affect the basis for entitlement to benefit. Therefore, it's not the type of change that itself would warrant remand. The rule change itself.
So you're saying it's based upon our limitations in our jurisdiction? Or are you saying it's based in the regulation? I'm sorry, I'm just very confused.
Right. There would need to be a reason for the claim to be remanded.
Who is requiring this reason? The regulation or the court's jurisdiction?
The language of the regulation, Your Honor. It's unless and until the claim is remanded and back before the agency for re-adjudication, the change, the lower evidentiary burden promulgated in this rule would not apply.
I think we're all having the same problem here, counsel, and that is you've given us a set of criteria here that nowhere in a rather expansive Federal Register discussion of comments received on this proposed regulation, nowhere in there is this concept discussed. Every other imaginable issue is addressed in the final rule and the accompanying discussion. And yet there's nothing that indicates that I can find that this court is in any way limited in applying this otherwise retroactive rule. And clearly, VA expansively wanted it to apply at each stage of its own process. I think you'll agree with that.
Yes, sir.
And no matter how a case came to be before VA, VA intends to apply this rule.
Yes.
And then I look, at the notice of proposed rulemaking, and it says that the purpose of this proposed rule is to improve timeliness, consistent decision making, and equitable resolution of PTSD claims. And then, as an effective date, the Secretary selected immediately effective as to a whole variety of enumerated instances, giving it retroactive effect. I don't see where there's any harm to the Secretary in reading into his rule to fill that square that's missing, that he intended the same retroactive effect as to cases pending on appeal before this court, the Federal Circuit, or the Supreme Court, which would throw us, I think, into the realm of the application of Bradley and cases along those lines, where normally courts apply the law that is in effect when they decide cases.
Well, Your Honor, the language in the final rule as to the effective date does not specifically address cases pending at the court. The Secretary maintains that the department's intent is clear, that it does not apply.
And that's where do we find that throughout. Clear intent?
Because the Secretary
now says
enumerated the categories of cases to which he intended the rule to apply. Now, if the court, that's the land grab, initial inquiry. If the regulation is clear as to its intent on retroactivity, then that's the initial inquiry.
But if that was the Secretary's intent, and this gets back to the nature of what we're looking at in the in the final rule and the summary and the discussion of the comments received that goes on for pages and is quite thorough in my view. Why in all of that discussion did the Secretary never say exactly what you have said now? That it is not the Secretary's intent to have this apply to cases pending on appeal before any judicial tribunal.
The regulation applies only to the department's adjudication of PTSD cases, Title 3, Section 3 of Title 38. The retroactive effect of that, if the court were to find that the Secretary's intent were not clear under Landgraf, then that analysis would move to the three-part test articulated in Princess Cruises based on the Supreme Court decision in Landgraf. And the Secretary contends that applying that three-part Princess Cruises test would weigh against applying this regulation retroactively to cases pending at the court. Again, the Secretary maintains that the language of the final rule itself was clear. The intent of the language for the final rule was clear, which is the Landgraf test. However, if it were found not to be, then Princess Cruises would apply. Under Princess Cruises, the first prong is to look to the nature and extent of the change in the law. The nature of this change is procedural and not substantive, in that it does not affect the basis for entitlement to a benefit. It lowers an evidentiary burden in a certain category of cases. The extent of the rule change, the extent is articulated in the final rule with the category of cases listed. It is intended to apply to cases before the agency or those, again, before the agency after remand by the court. The second prong under Princess Cruises, the degree of connection between the operation of the new rule and past relevant action. Vacating an agency decision that was rendered before the new rule, the new procedural rule took effect, and remanding that for compliance with the new rule would increase the burden on the Secretary.
I'm sorry, I have to stop you there.
Yes.
The Secretary receives approximately 1 million claims a year, is adjudicating a number of them over a number of years. I don't know how many of them are PTSD per se, but I know it's the second highest diagnostic code issued. So there's probably, you know, several hundred thousand PTSD claims floating around the agency. Would that be fair to say?
I do not have specific numbers for them.
The court gets 5,000 cases a year of cases that would have fallen in between the time this regulation is published and this and a case that gets filed at the court or that was in the process of doing that. It's going to be a very small number of cases. Can you please explain to me how that places a substantial burden on the agency as opposed to the one it's placed upon itself?
Again, I don't have specific numbers, and I'm not sure that the Princess Cruises test requires a substantial burden. The test is intended to determine whether it has impermissible retroactive effect.
Right, I'm just responding to what you were saying, that this would place a substantial burden on the agency, and I'm just curious to figure out how that would be.
Well, I don't believe I took a position that it would be a substantial burden on the agency.
Well, my mistake. I believe that's what I heard.
It would require the agency to re-adjudicate PTSD claims remanded by the court that were decided before this rule change took effect. So it would involve re-adjudication of claims, which is an impermissible retroactive effect under the Princess Cruises test, because it does increase it's the relation between the connection of the operation of the new law and actions taken prior to the effective date of the change in law.
But we never get to Princess Cruises if we determine that the Secretary had the intent to have retroactive application. Am I correct?
if the court were to determine that the secretary's intent was clear as to the temporal scope of the retroactive application, that is correct, Your Honor. You do not get to the Princess Cruises test. And that is essentially the secretary's position, that under Landgraf, the secretary's intent is clear. It does not state that the specific language must address that, but it's the intent. And it's
the secretary's intent that the cases pending before the court not be returned is clear?
That's the secretary's position. It's not
based on the identification of the five areas in the regulation?
Yes, Your Honor.
And the absence of any reference to cases pending before the court?
Yes, Your Honor.
Let me ask another question, counsel. In your pleading, July 13th is listed as the date. As I read the regulations, it says July 12th. Which date is correct?
The July 13th, 2010 date. The secretary published subsequently notice in the Federal Register correcting that.
Good. So just to be clear, the absence of a reference to the court, are you suggesting that the secretary has authority to tell the court what to do with cases pending before it?
Absolutely not, Your Honor. That's why the secretary's intent here is clear. The secretary may state the cases to which
it has authority. Right. So,
well, the secretary has on other occasions, however, promulgated regulations that he says are effective regarding cases pending at various levels of appeal within the judicial system, has he not? I'm looking now at the notice of proposed rulemaking that wound up being involved in DAV, where the secretary says that these amendments apply to appeals for which notice of a disagreement was filed on or before February 22nd, 2002, and to appeals pending, whether at the Board of Veterans' Appeals, the United States Court of Veterans' Appeals for Veterans' Claims, the United States Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, on that date. So, does the secretary or does the secretary not have that authority?
It's not at all clear to me that the secretary has the authority. In this case, where the secretary is promulgating a regulation under Section 3 of Title 38 as to his own adjudication of PTSD claims before the agency, it's beyond the scope of this regulatory change.
Let me go back to something that is troubling me, and it spins off of Judge Sholin's questions. This regulation is going to apply to at least tens of thousands of veterans. One of the stated purposes of the proposed regulation is to treat veterans equitably. We have currently pending before this court, not yet decided, 4,100 cases. 4,100 cases compared to 800,000 plus pending at VA. Why would the secretary intend, when he promulgated this regulation, to exclude this group of veterans, this small group of veterans who have cases pending before this court or the Federal Circuit, when his stated intent is to apply this regulation to everybody else who has a pending claim?
Well, Your Honor, the final rule as published in the Federal Register indicates that the purpose is to simplify development and research procedures. Cases that were already finally decided by the board there's no additional development or research procedures.
Well, what's the secretary going to do with cases that are remanded to which he says he will apply this regulation?
Well, the secretary is required to re-adjudicate those claims and conduct appropriate development and research in matters that it adjudicates.
And I assume that he's re-adjudicating every claim that was decided at an RO to which this regulation applies.
The board, yes, any case upon which the board issues the decision, obviously, would after the effective date of the regulation.
Well, also to cases that are decided by the IRO, or cases pending at the IRO, or cases filed next week, or any other case.
Or cases within the 120-day period before applying, filing an NOA to this court, after the board had finally decided it on, let's say, July 11th. They would have to re-adjudicate it, right?
Right, but the board is not under an obligation to re-adjudicate cases pending at the court upon which the board had already issued a final decision as of the effective date of the regulation, absent a remand by the court, or under which the board is already required to re-adjudicate to comply with the court's order.
So if the court decides under 7252 that the cases pending before the court should receive the benefit of reviewing the new regulation and we remand them, then the Secretary's position is those are the kinds of cases that should be applied retroactively.
If the cases are remanded by the court to the board to be re-adjudicated, then yes, Your Honor, the new change would apply. But you know, the Secretary's position is that the retroactivity of the regulation is not favored under the law, and it should not be construed to have that effect unless the language requires that result. That is the Supreme Court statement in Landgraf.
Well, we actually not applying retroactivity? We'd be applying the current state of the law. So in order to effectuate the statement that you're saying that retroactivity is not favored, we would have to apply the old law. You know, so to me, it's not really retroactive application of a current provision. It's the current provision. And I don't understand. It's not applying it to an old case. I'm just sort of... never mind. I'll just muse among myself.
Please. What I'm struggling with is the fact that unlike the cases on which you have relied, here the Secretary has given us a tremendous amount of information indicating that he intends a retroactive effect. And against that, you are asking us to now go back and apply a test that is designed for a situation in which there's no indication that a retroactive effect was intended. And you're asking us to parse this in such a way that we read into what is not said anywhere in the rulemaking that the Secretary intended to exclude cases on appeal in the judicial system. And I'm sure you've said it, but tell me again why it is that we are dealing with something here other than a clearly expressed intent by the Secretary that this change in the evidentiary burden is intended to have a retroactive effect.
The language of the proposed final rule specifies the categories of cases to which the Secretary intended it to apply. The Secretary's final rule states that specifically. It speaks to the temporal reach and the extent of the retroactive effect. It's not necessarily an all or nothing proposition. The Secretary has expressed intent to have retroactive application to a certain category of cases, and that intent is, I believe, clearly stated.
Okay, let me take this.
So why would we? I'm sorry. Why would we? You're asking us to say that the Secretary impliedly excluded those cases undergoing judicial review. Now, we've addressed in a number of different contexts, actually, as a sidelight to the Kuzma, Karnas, Burncloud cases, situations where in that portion of the VCAA, in Section 4, I believe, applying Section 7, there was language included that indicated that it applied to anything not final. And that was interpreted by the courts to indicate that includes cases in appellate review. So the fact that you say, well, we have a final VA decision here, doesn't necessarily mean that it's over where we have a veteran who has applied, who has filed an NOA. Then the case is still a live case. And why would you have us imply that there's some distinction here not expressed between those cases and the ones that are enumerated here, where the language in the rulemaking doesn't say this is an exclusive list? It says lots of things, but it doesn't say this is an exclusive list. It doesn't say our intent is only to apply this to veterans who currently have claims pending before VA or file future claims before VA.
And neither does the language require that the retroactive effect extend to cases pending at the court, which is...
Well, if I can interject on that, you said that your belief is that the secretary doesn't have the authority to tell this court what to do. So what value would there have been in the secretary, or what can we draw from the absence of saying what the court could or could not do in the regulation if they didn't have the authority to do so?
It goes to the intent of the secretary.
So the secretary would have put in hortatory language that meant nothing because he didn't have the authority to do it under your interpretation?
Or isn't it more reasonable to assume that the secretary didn't address this court because he expected the court to apply the law that existed at the time that it made its decision? As long as, in this case, it found that the secretary intended a retroactive effect.
My time is up, Your Honor, but...
Please continue on.
The secretary's position is that the language does not require the result, which is the Landgraf and reiterated in Kuzma. The language of the regulation, the final rule, is not silent as to retroactivity. It expressly states the extent to which the secretary intended the rule to have retroactive effect, and the secretary maintains that that is clear, that the intent is clear on the face of the language. However, if that's not the case, then the Princess Cruz's analysis would apply, and not the Karnas analysis, as appellant suggests. Moreover, it's not even clear that the regulatory change encompasses the type of alleged stressor to which appellant has claimed entitlement. Based on all of those factors, the secretary would ask the court to affirm the board's denial of his PTSD claim.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mr. Carpenter?
Judge Davis, at page 6 of my motion, at footnote 1.
I saw that. Thank you.
I have nothing further to add unless there's any questions.
Why should we discount the secretary's statement as to what he intended in
because
this?
He didn't put it in his rule. He didn't publish it. He can't come in after the horse has left the barn and said, this is what we meant.
Doesn't the Supreme Court decision say he can? They gave deference to the agency position that was raised for the first time in a brief.
But that, to me, is a different circumstance than attributing what was meant when they published this rule. What they meant when they published this rule was what they said, and it frankly ignores the reality that has essentially been conceded that they're not sure that the Secretary would have had any authority anyway.
But hasn't the Federal Circuit... Go ahead.
It simply would have been, as you suggested, Your Honor, hortatory to simply have declared that we don't want you to do this, Court. What the Secretary wants or doesn't want isn't pertinent to the question. The question is, what was the law at the time in which the matter was before the court, and was retroactive intent articulated? The answer to both questions are in favor of applying this regulation.
Well, the Federal Circuit has been fairly, we'll say, generous in deferring to the agency position and in reversing this court's review of agency intent in regulations. So I think I need a little bit more from you on why we shouldn't give deference.
And to give a clear example, the Haas case is a good example, I think, where the Secretary asserted positions with regard to the interpretation of a regulation, even after review by this court. And the Federal Circuit gave deference to those statements of agency intent.
But the statement that's being offered now requires clairvoyance. It requires this court to divine the intent of the Secretary based upon its five-bullet listing and say, by having so clearly and precisely articulated it, by our omission, we meant to say. That is not a reasonable interpretation of that regulatory intent.
Mr. Carpenter, if the court were inclined to remand the pending cases, on what basis, what legal theories should the court use?
Change in law.
7252.
Yes. This court's case law is clear that if there is a change in law, and under Bradley, this court is to apply the law as it exists when the matter is before the court, the law that is the matter before the court is the amended regulation. This court should apply that law. The only reason for this court not to apply that law is if the Secretary had said, this regulation starts on July 13th forward. There shall be no retroactive application. Anybody who was in line before, too bad. They didn't say that. And to say that the hundreds of thousands of claimants in line are going to be treated differently than maybe the several hundred claimants before this court is simply an unreasonable and untenable position.
Thank you.
Unless there's nothing further, thank the court very much for their attention.
Nothing further from me. Thank you very much. The case will be submitted for consideration, and the judges will now come down to greet counsel.
All rise.